Welcome to another edition of the Hawk Off the Press podcast. I'm your host, Gazette Hawkeyes reporter John Steppy. I'm excited to welcome back to the podcast Iowa baseball coach Rick Heller. Rick, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks, John. Appreciate you having me on.
So you go into this season with some pretty high expectations, seeing you in kind of national preseason rankings, and then kind of an up and down season since then. What's your message to the team? What's kind of your mentality when maybe things aren't going as highly or as well as maybe things were supposed to go kind of preseason?
Got it. Yeah, I mean, the message is always the same, at least in our program. It's just, you know, you play the game. There's only, you know, one way to do that. You know, you'll try to eliminate the focus some guys have on things they can't control. You can't change what happened yesterday or the last pitch, and you have to keep moving forward. You know, it's always about getting better and improving, and keep playing hard, and you know, things will eventually you know, turn around. The issue this year was one we haven't had to deal with since I've been in Iowa. You know, it's happened a few times in my career, and it's a tough one to recover from. You know, we played a really tough schedule, and it was kind of by design because we knew this team, you know, would have potential to have the pitching to handle it. Coming into the year, we knew our offense was going to be a different style offense. You know, we lost Keaton Anthony and we lost Brendan Dorigi in the middle of the lineup. But we felt like, you know, the top nine guys in this lineup were going to be a really good blend of speed, power, average, on-base percentage. Maybe not the one guy that was going to hit, you know, 15 homers, but seven or eight that could hit five to 10, you know, or five to eight. And offensively, really for the first 34 games or so, was fantastic. Like, as good as we could have drawn it up, really. I mean, numbers were fantastic. All the guys were getting on base. And just as I said, it was a good mix of speed, you know, power, stolen bases, and on base percentage was well over 400 as a team, batting average over 300 as a team. But the pitching, we got off to a slow start. And unfortunately, we blew some leads that, I mean, and I'm talking four runs, five runs, six run leads against really good teams, Auburn, Virginia, you know, teams like that. And we came into the year without an experienced closer. Last year it was the same situation, and we had a little bit of ups and, you know, we had some ups and downs trying to determine who was going to be the guy that took the ball to get the last three outs. And you know, Will Christopherson stepped up. We had some other guys step up. But it took a little bit, but it wasn't catastrophic. Well, we lost, you know, really out of the first probably 8 to 10 losses this season were all games had we just thrown strikes or, you know, did the minimum, we're going to win those games. And we lost pretty much all of them. Well, when you don't have a guy that you know you're giving the ball to, like we had Dylan Nedved for 3 years, and then prior to that we had guys that, you know, just came down the line, and we've comes out. I mean, our record with a lead after six inning is like crazy high percentage, almost 90%. And so all of a sudden, what was perceived as our strength heading into the season was causing us problems and causing us to lose games. Throw in the fact that the three starters weren't giving us many innings. I mean, you were going to the bullpen in the fourth inning or the third inning or the fifth inning. So you were asking your bullpen to throw, you know, 13 to 15 innings on a weekend. And that makes it difficult to win against anybody, let alone the teams we were playing. And so really that perfect storm, I felt led to a lot of, it's kind of contagious. Like every guy that would go out and take the ball in those situations, it was just free base, double, home run. And the next thing you know, we've blown a big lead against a quality team that would have been big for the RPI and all the things that we'd hoped for. Well, the great thing is that there wasn't any finger pointing. Everybody just continued to work and do their job. The hitters weren't blaming the pitchers. The pitchers weren't mad at anybody for this. Everybody just stuck to the plan and just kept plugging along. And the message was always, as bad as this may seem and as bummed as we are that it happened, we just have to keep playing because, we're going to get it figured out. And when we do, we're going to be a pretty, pretty good ball club and we still have a chance to reach our goals. And we've been fighting that way the whole year. And really, I'm trying to think of the record. I don't know. We were like 4-8 or something like that at one time. And since that time, it's pretty good. You're looking at like, 24-7 or something like that, since that point. And had we stayed healthy on the positions player side, I really feel like, there'd be a good chance we'd be really close to first place in the Big Ten. And, we had some key losses at some bad times and, it's hurt us. It's just been a kind of bad luck year with some uncontrollables. We were without Andy Nelson and Sam Peterson for about 10 days, right before the Michigan series. And we had a doubleheader on that Saturday because of weather and the wind blew in and, we hit three balls that would have been home runs and we end up losing 3-2. And, it's just one of those weird years and the wind hasn't been very friendly. We've barely played a day when it wasn't blowing 30 mile an hour straight in our face. And, guys have been just battling and trying to find ways to win games. We've established some guys in the bullpen who we feel really comfortable, guys like Jack Young and Ben Dete and Anthony Watts and Aaron Savory. Those guys have really stepped up and fixed the bullpen problems. Without Peterson and Nelson, and then now we're without Peterson and Huxdorf for the rest of the season. And you're talking, Huxdorf and Peterson both putting up, first team all Big Ten type numbers, and, Peterson going to be a really good draft pick. Those are really tough losses for this type of team that we have offensively. And, we still found a way to win, what we won, 4 out of 5, as we sit right now. And, Brody Breck has really settled in and stepped up and has been fantastic in his last 3 starts. We were without Cade Overmuller, so keep throwing the adversity at us. And Cade was pitching on Fridays. He hasn't pitched the last 2 weeks. Fingers crossed, we think he may be able to give us something this weekend. Hopefully he can give us, 40, 50 pitches on Friday to lighten the load on the guys who had to pick up the slack this past weekend, because Anthony Watts had to start and that took a big cog of our bullpen out. And then Aaron Savory had to come in after him. And there's another big part of our bullpen. And they did a great job and we made it through, won the game on Friday. So if Cade can give us 30, 40, he's gonna have to ramp back up, cause he's been out. And then hopefully we can get him up to 50, 60 in the short week as we go to Des Moines. And that would set him up to possibly throw game 2 of the Big Ten tournament. That'd kind of be the plan if all goes well with his injury. We're heading down to play Illinois this weekend, and they are in first place, and they're a ball club that's built for their home field. It's a bit of a launching pad. You see their record at home. I think they've only lost once, maybe twice at home. And, you look at their road stuff, and they're fairly human on the road, but they're built for power and home runs. And I guess we're hoping we catch a break and maybe the cold front follows us. It's followed us all season and blowing in our face. So maybe it'll blow in our face all weekend in Champaign, which would be for the first time this year, a welcome sight. Cause our team right now, especially with Peterson and Huxdorf, two of our two of our best home run hitters, you know, we're not built for power right now. And so that's going to be the situation, but that's kind of the season in a nutshell. But the end game is, hey, we've won 28 games now, and we're 10 games over 500. We put ourselves in a really good spot to be in the conference tournament. You know, I don't want to say we're in, but historically, since they went to the 8-team tournament, 12 has gotten in every year, and we're sitting at 13. It is a bit of a different season in the Big Ten. If you look at the standings, it's really a bunch of good teams all log jammed, you know, basically 1 through 10, 11 this year. And I don't know, I'm not good enough at math at this point, especially with us having a bye week in the final week of the season and us playing 3 more games than the majority of the league. If it's that strange year that maybe it takes 14 to get in or 13 to get in, who knows? So we'll just keep plugging away. And then on the flip side of that, John, we're sitting here talking about getting in the tournament. We go down and sweep Illinois. I mean, we're mathematically still able to win the league. So, I mean, that's how crazy the race is this year and how balanced the league is from top to bottom. It's the, you know, a lot of people nationally have said the Big Ten's not very good this year. And I think they say that because we don't have a dominant team, you know, a team that's just, you know, won 40 games or something like that to this point. But all the coaches in the league have asked me the same question. They're like, what do you think? I said, I think it's the best our league has ever been. They said, that's what I think, because nobody, you can't go anywhere and think you're going to walk in and win. And even Northwestern and Ben Greenspan, their new coach, has done a fantastic job with them, because when they had the coaching change last summer, they just got decimated in the transfer portal, and he didn't have any time to recruit when he got the job. So he's getting a lot out of that team, and they're playing really hard and they're scrappy, and they gave us everything we wanted for 3 games and took us to 13 innings on Sunday, and they're the last place team. And with that being said, we're excited to go to Illinois and take on the number one team. That's a good challenge for us. And then it's going to be hopefully a fun end of the season when we go to Des Moines at Principal Park and have some big crowds and some people that haven't seen us play, you know, normally over in Des Moines, and then get ready to go hopefully to Omaha and make a run, because that's going to be our only chance to get in the regional this year. We know going in it's pretty cut and dry. There's been a lot of years when we went over there hoping that we had done enough for the regionals to get an at-large bid, but it's pretty apparent that, you know, we're going to have to win the tournament. And, you know, we've been in the championship game several times since we've been here. And we'll go into that tournament with that mindset.
As you're mentioning, kind of with this logjam at the top of the Big Ten, only game and a half, if I did my math right, a game and a half behind Illinois, ahead of 3 games against Illinois, as daunting as that is, 18-2 at home, does that seem like an opportunity in terms of, okay, even with all of the challenges, like, you still have this on the table?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. It really is. And it's just a testament to what we talked about earlier, your first question, and what the message was, and just keep playing. And that's all you can do. You keep playing and you do things right, and you worry about the things that you can control and try not to focus on things you can't. Play for your team, play for the right reasons. Don't play with selfish, your own agenda type things. And good things are always going to happen, maybe not good compared to what somebody thought we should have did, but in our world, you know, it's just the next pitch, and that's all there is. And we determine the attitude we're going to have, and we determine how we're going to attack the next day and the next pitch and the next game, whatever it might be. And we try real hard not to worry about who we're playing. I mean, obviously we prepare and we have a plan each and every game of how we're attacking the opponent. But the primary focus is on us playing the game in a way that's going to allow us to win, playing team baseball on the offensive side, trying to eliminate the free bases on the pitching side. And generally when we do those things, you look at the scoreboard at the end of the game and we usually win. It's the days that we give up 15 or 20 free bases. You're not going to survive those days, no matter how well you play in other areas of the game. And so we've been doing better at it. It's not perfect, and there's still some guys that are a work in progress with their development. But everybody is plugging along and trying to get better, and that's always the message that we have here at Iowa and in the baseball program, is just until the last day we're together, we're trying to improve and get better and play together as a team and care about your teammates' success more than your own, and all those things that I think lead to winning baseball.
You were mentioning Brody with his last three starts, an 0.79 ERA, hard to get much better than that. What do you think kind of turned the switch for him, and how much does that help when you kind of have the circle of, okay, bullpen having to do so many innings to be able to kind of stop that cycle a little bit?
Well, it's been great because you can see the results. I mean, a lot more wins, and that was historically what we've had here at Iowa since I've been here. You know, in the previous 10 years, we've always had starters who got deep into the game relatively soon in the season. You know, by week two or three, we had guys going six, maybe seven. And that didn't happen with this team until Brody started when Brody flipped the switch here about 3 weeks ago. So we were, 9 weeks in before we had anybody get us that far into the game. And the bullpen, it just adds so much stress to your bullpen, especially against a quality opponent. I mean, that's what we've done here offensively. On the flip side, is we've done a tremendous job of getting the best pitchers out of the game by the fifth inning, because we grind them out and we don't chase. And in great example, we faced Sears from Nebraska on Friday night, undefeated, probably going to be pitcher of the year in the league. Incredible numbers going. He had a complete game shutout the week before, and we had four runs on him and had him out of the game after the fifth inning with a lead. Boom. But unfortunately, things didn't work out that way for us on the mound. They got our starter out after the fourth and, too many innings for the bullpen, and they beat us. But we did everything that we needed to do offensively to give ourselves a chance. And that's what teams were able to do to us for the first time, was they were getting our starters out, all three our starters out of the game. And, we didn't have a Trenton Wallace that was, was going to get you into the seventh, if not more, or Adam Mazur, just keep going down our list. And like Ty Langenberg was that steady Eddie last year that would get us deep in the game. So, Brody had a minor, it's like an oblique tweak, that was causing him some discomfort. And if you've ever had one of those as a baseball player, they stink, because everything you do is rotational, and that's when they pull or tug or hurt. And Brody pitched through it against Ohio State, and he toughed it out for us, and he didn't have a great start. And I was worried to get him back to 100%. I thought he might have to miss a start, similar to Cade. Our trainer, Jake Feldman, they did a great job. They just kept pounding the rehab, and really, we were still asking the question, what do you think, Brody, can you go, in the next game? And he's like, yeah, I think I feel better than I did last week. I think I'll be fine. And really, since that's happened, I just watching him pitch, it's the first time since he's been here that he just seems really in control of everything, like control of himself, his emotions. He's dealing with adversity, like, umpire misses a pitch or whatever it might be, it's not affecting the next pitch. He just looks comfortable, is what I would say. And it's been really, 3 weeks in a row where he has gone out there and worked ahead in the count, pounded the strike zone. He's been able to hit with, all three of his pitches, which is big. And, what a lot of times would get Brody in trouble and get his pitch count up is he had turned into, like a one pitch guy, and teams knew he couldn't hit with his fastball, say, and then they could just sit on his slider or vice versa. And he was going deep counts, falling behind. But here lately, you know, the last 3 weeks, he's been able to get ahead. He's been able to use all of his pitches. And when he can do that, then this is what you're going to see. You know, nobody's really going to do much with him. The only time you'll see people do damage on Brody is when he is struggling to locate and they can eliminate pitches. You know, they just take pitches away or they just take and set on the one that they know he's able to throw for a strike. And you know, we haven't been in that situation with Brody for a while, and that's great to see, because when he is in a good place like he is now, I mean, he's pretty tough to beat.
And then with kind of Brody's success, I'm sure you'd love to keep him there forever, but the MLB does seem to have some interest in him. How do you see kind of his skill set projecting over to the next level as we get a little closer to the MLB draft?
You know, Brody, Marcus Morgan, Cade Obermueller, all three of those guys, you know, they received a lot of attention in the offseason, and they were getting hyped up a lot by, you know, the college baseball people and the, you know, the stuff that talks about draft rankings and what the pro guys think and what the scouts think and all that stuff, you know, is readily available to read all season long. But in reality, you know, you're talking about three guys who have all improved. They've all gotten better each year, but they still have, you know, a ways to go before they're what I would call like a polished, you know, professional type pitcher. They're still working through things. And I think all three of those guys, when they get to pro ball, you're going to see down the road, you know, 2 to 3 years, that all three of those guys are going to be really special. And Brody, especially, where he's at now, he's made a big jump here the last 3 weeks of the season that put him in a different place from even Marcus and Cade's development. I didn't know if we would see it in his career, quite frankly. I mean, you don't know. And I'm glad, I'm really glad that we are. I mean, he's helped the team a ton. And as to your point, he's getting deeper in the game, which really helps our bullpen, especially in the situation we're in now. But I think, you know, the sky's the limit for all three of those guys. And Brody, you know, I think could be a big leaguer, you know, fairly quick. His stuff is, you know, off the charts. And that's the world we live in now. And that is, you know, the stuff is important, but also pitchability is important and throwing strikes. And sometimes that gets forgotten as we get caught up in guys that can throw 100 miles an hour and 92 mile an hour sliders and, you know, 24 inch sweepers, or, you know, stuff that everybody's enamored with. And all those three guys have incredible stuff. And it's, but it's a battle every day to work on, you know, the delivery and the movement process and, you know, being able to throw three pitches for strikes and being able to throw off speed and fastball counts and all the, you know, to locate your fastball on both sides of the plate. And, you know, I mean, that's a process that all three of those guys still have a ways to go. And I think being in professional baseball, where they'll play, you know, 140 games in the minor leagues for a couple years, and they can go out with a little less pressure, that every pitch, you know, really hit, you know, you kind of live and die in college baseball because you got to try to win them all. As you well know, John, I mean, if you're fighting for a regional at-large bid, especially in the North, I mean, every pitch is crucial. And sometimes that isn't always the best for a guy that's trying to develop a lot of different things in the process. But it'll all pay off down the road because of the hot spots they've been in the college game will pay off because they've been there before. Once everything gets polished up and they get a bunch of innings in the minor leagues these next couple years, I mean, I still think Brody's going to go pretty high, even though it hasn't been exactly the way he drew it up, but the stuff is still there, and his ability to bounce back and pitch like he has down the stretch for us. And if he can continue that with, a few more starts, I think he's put himself in a really good spot. And, and then Marcus will probably sign as well. And then Cade is an interesting one. Cade is a guy who in the baseball world, they say he has the golden ticket, because there aren't many draft eligible sophomores. And there's a kind of weird rule where if they're a certain age by a certain date, that they can draft them after their sophomore year. So Cade essentially has a leverage year this year, can see what the offers are. If he likes them, he can go. If he doesn't, he's got another leverage year next year as a junior, and he can bet on himself and come back to school and hopefully make another big step forward and put himself in maybe even a better position next year. That's all up to, his family and his advisor and those guys. But it's a good situation to be in for Kate.
And then with Dwayne Banksfield, initially a plan for a bigger renovation, then that gets scaled back to starting out with the clubhouse. How much of a difference will what is going to happen, the portion that can be done right away, how much of a difference does that make? And what's your perspective on when kind of this entire renovation could get done?
Well, this is how I see it. I mean, it was a big blow. I mean, we thought we were there. It was 8 years of hard work and dedication and commitment to getting it done. And not just myself, but a lot of other guys in our department, in our foundation, that logged a lot of hours to get to that point. And then to have it kind of the rug pulled out from under you, it was a kick in the gut for sure. But the great thing is that, when I talked to Beth Getz and my direct supervisor, Matt Henderson, I said, we have to do something. We have to do what we can do to get this thing started. We can't wait any longer. And the way the board process and the way the processes work at Iowa, I knew the bulk of it, we couldn't get done quickly, because with the amount of money we lost, we still have a very significant amount of money to do renovations. But now we're going to have to do it in phases. So what you're seeing this summer are the things that we knew we could do quick and get it started so that we weren't delayed a full year. We've been waiting to do the new turf for a little while because we wanted to try to do the turf at the same time we were doing the stadium tear down so that you weren't having traffic, on the new turf. So we've been patient waiting for that. And we can't wait any longer. It's getting to a point where it needs to be replaced. So we're going to do the new turf, which will look great, and it'll be awesome. And it'll be great for the players. We're going to do some tweaks to the dugouts, to make them more roomy, spacious, better. Guys will appreciate that. Musco Lighting in Oskaloosa, those guys were so generous. Their donation to the project, they're donating the lights from the Field of Dreams game. And so we will be getting, major league quality lights. And we might be one of a handful of college teams that have, that quality of lights, and they can do the shows and all the colors, and it'll be great. And again, we've been patiently waiting to get the lights in so that we could sync it up with the teardown of the stands and the rebuild of the seating bowl. But now we knew, because those projects have been in waiting for a couple years, boom, we're just going to go and get them done. And then when we do the stadium and the press box, we'll just have to work around them. And then our primary locker room we renovated with a good friend of the program, helped us out 2 years ago. And it's in the Jacobson building, which is really close to the baseball field. Basically, as you walk out the doors, 10 steps and you're into the facility. And so our primary locker room is going to stay in the Jacobson building. What we need though at the ballpark, and I don't know if you knew this, John, but right behind, if you go in the tunnel behind the dugout, there is a small clubhouse that our guys use. They have lockers back there. There's not much space, and it's not real nice or anything, but it's okay. You know, I mean, it's been good for us. It's warm. You can put your stuff in there. You're not, you know, cluttering the dugout. We can put snacks in there, that type of thing. There's bathroom. So what we're going to do is we're going to build a small, modern, nice clubhouse. We're not going to have to invest the money to make it, you know, showers and all that stuff as the primary locker room, but it'll be a really nice addition for our players when we're on home series or when we're in the fall practice. They can set up all their baseball stuff in their lockers out there. They're not having to drag it back and forth from the Jacobson locker. And then we will gut the current clubhouse and clean it up and make it into a multi-purpose room, training room, which we don't have out there. We can get ice machines and all the stuff that we have to haul out from the Jacobson building. Now we'll be able to set up shop with a really nice training room. We'll put a fueling station there. There'll be some storage in there, some other amenities that will help make things more comfortable when we're at home. And that's going to be all started this summer and finished before next season. So in the meantime, we're going to go very soon. We will start planning for the rest of the renovation. We will see how much money we have left. And then what we will do is we'll prioritize, and then we'll do it in phases, like I said. So if we have enough money to do the press box and the seating, that's what we'll do. If we don't, then we'll do the press box. And then the next year we'll do the seating. And then, you know, the next year we'll do, you know, the bathrooms and concessions and whatever. And I'm just speaking off my head. It could go in any order. But that's how we're going to do it. And I am hopeful that I'm pretty confident that we will be able to get the process completed. It'll give us almost a year to get through the board process and the politics and how things work to do projects at a state university. It's not a piece of cake. I mean, you got to do things right, and everything has to be done by the letter of the law and by the book, which is how it should be. But that'll give us time to get really organized and come up with a systematic plan to get those things going. And my goal would be to be able to start construction right after the 25 season with the next phase. I'm hoping for more, you know, I'm hoping it's a couple things and not just one. But whatever we have, we're going to roll with. And then I also have another year to get back out and talk to our donors and our fans and try to drum up some more support for the project and recoup some of the money that's no longer there.
Well, Rick, thanks for joining me.
Yeah. Thank you, John.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning into another episode. Until next time, we will talk Hawks later.
Get a daily update from the Gazette with our daily news podcast. Add it to your podcast player or your Alexa-friendly device to get a bite-sized local news update each day. Check it out at thegazette.com/podcasts.